Parenting's hard, you don't know what to do. You're blaming your kids, but it's probably you. You love your kids and that you can trust. Just remember your kids don't suck.
Welcome to Your Kids Don't Suck, cultivating closeness with your children through non-coercive conscious parenting. We're your hosts, Kara Tedstone and Rathia Lee. Let's dive in and grow together.
Welcome back to Your Kids Don't Suck, and we are so psyched to be back. And every time we get to record, it is such a gift. And we get to talk about some of our most favorite topics relating to parenting and treating our children like whole human beings. And today we have special guests, and it feels very auspicious for several reasons, but Vivek Patel from Meaningful Ideas is here, and Kara is also here, and his daughter Veets is here. And if you haven't listened to episode 3 with Vivek, you might not know that he has been my main source of information and guidance and mentorship around non-coercive collaborative parenting, and is the reason I jumped into this whole thing in the first place. And I never knew I would end up helping other people with it. Like, I had no idea. I was just drowning. And I reached for Vivek through the internet, and we are now dear, dear friends. And so he's here to get deeper, but now he's with the person he did the whole experiment with. There she is, Veets. And so I was just telling Veets that she is the most famous person I've never met. We talk about you all the time. And I'm so excited to hear your point of view about your life, how you're doing, and just how this upbringing has affected your everyday, your relationships, your work, how you think about things.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. I'm excited to be here and nervous.
Yeah, it's normal. I'm nervous too.
I have butterflies too. Even after all this time, I still get the butterflies.
Yeah, so we just get to be messy and imperfect and just be ourselves, and you know.
You got to make mistakes to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So Veets, I'll think of an opening question, Karen, then maybe you could go from there. But what was of interest to you about doing this podcast?
For me? I just like new experiences, seeing what can be talked about. I haven't done a podcast with my dad as well in a while, and we've been trying to arrange something. So this feels like a good starting point to finally get that ball rolling. So we'll see what happens today.
I like what you said about you have to make mistakes to learn, and that's such a powerful thing to be aware of. So much of the traditional way that parents treat their kids and just the way we treat ourselves, it's the opposite message, that mistake is like a problem. Bad. It's wrong and you have to fix it. I always used to say, I don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to learn from a mistake right away. I want to make sure I make the mistake a lot of times so I can get it right. And I think that's a beautiful way for us to treat ourselves and each other. So I appreciate that you started with that right off the bat because, you know, when you're just speaking and it's not scripted, you never know what's going to come out and what's going to happen.
It's true.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question that is almost like diving in deep right off the bat? Like Vivek is somebody that, like so many of us, like we listen to like a podcast. We are like, oh, he's so wise. Like he knows just what to say. And like, we go to him and you're his kid. And so much of traditional parenting is like parents coming at it from that exact angle. Like my kid is my empty vessel that I will pour into all of my wisdom and lecture and also like shame. And we hear Vivek says that's not how he's done it. So tell me, how does it feel for you to like hear him talk to you about life, about, you know, even if it's not about non-coercive parenting, if it's about just anything, like, do you get that? Like, oh, my dad's lecturing me. My dad is just trying to tell me all this stuff. And, you know, because that's how a lot of kids feel.
Mm-hmm. For me, from what I remember, I never really felt that way. It always felt like a conversation. Even if I couldn't speak, it felt like he was giving me the options to pick between the yellow car and the blue car to see which one I actually want to get. And now we have full-on conversations and lecture each other about whatever we're talking about. We come to each other with each other's problems or whatever we need to talk about, and we're able to just freely share it and discuss as two humans instead of an authority figure or parent or whoever, wisdom giver and the vessel instead.
That's beautiful.
Let me just say, one of my sayings is the magic is in the mutuality. Mm-hmm. And Vietz moved out, moved in to her own place a couple of years ago now with her partner. And when we were, when she was moving in and we were packing everything up, I was saying moving in instead of moving out, because moving out has this idea that you're leaving your home, but she never really left. It's still her home, but she moved into her own place. But when we were doing that, we were going through all of her old schoolwork and stuff and throwing most of it out and just keeping a few things. And we found this assignment from like when she was in grade one. And the assignment said was about responsibility. And it said, it had three questions on it. It said, who is a responsible person in your life? What are they responsible to you for? And what are you responsible to them for? And her answer was, my dad is grade one, right? My dad is a responsible person in my life. He's responsible for teaching me what's right. And I'm responsible for teaching him the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so she knew from that age that I really valued her wisdom, you know, and not just like for show, but like, I actually value her wisdom and then I learn from it. And I'm so much more myself and more true to myself as a person now, because of really taking her seriously all those years. I learned about love and I learned about myself and I learned about communication. And I learned about so many things about myself and about life by honoring her wisdom. And like she said, now we regularly go to each other for support. And it's really a beautiful thing.
So Vietz, how do you describe to other people what your childhood was like?
I usually just say it's not like the traditional way of parenting. I personally don't like getting into it because then people argue and whatnot. Mm. And I'm not about that. I just like going with the flow. You don't like it? Okay. And so if someone does ask me though, I then go in a little deeper and say, they tried to make it as mutual an experience for learning and understanding as possible. Even if I was a kid, they'd still give me the choices, like I said before, or they tell me the consequences, the pros and cons of whatever the situation is. If I wanted to run into a brick wall, they'd say, hey, if you run into the brick wall, it's going to hurt your face. But then you'll also learn that, you know, if you do still want to try it, you'll learn that it's going to hurt the next time you do that. Because like, if you're playing sports, you might need to learn how that feels first before in a game, so you're not freaking out when you scratch your arm against the wall or something.
I love that so much. A lot of what I feel like you give me when you talk about this relationship is so much, he's like your dad is like this wise, like, okay, let me call him and get some like reassurance. And then when you talk, it's like this, like hopefulness. Like, I feel like that's exactly what I do. Am I going to have this with my kid? Like, let me pray. Like, let me just like, you know, that is truly my biggest desire. I think a lot of us parents were desperate for that. If we're listening to this podcast, that's all we want. So it's like really, really extra hopeful to hear you talk about how you viewed that, how you experienced that. Cause like, if I'm doing that now with my kid and she can talk about our relationship like this, man, that is like, I can't think of anything better.
Yeah, I can understand that.
And obviously you were aware your whole life that you were being brought up differently than almost everyone else, or probably everyone else. Question mark.
At some point I realized it. I don't remember when, but I remember, I think, Dad, you know a story when it actually happened, that I came home from school and was like, this is different.
Wow.
and it was just weird to notice.
Yeah, and when her friends would come over, often when they would walk into the apartment, they would just stand in the foyer for the first 5 minutes, kind of in shock, watching us interact with each other. Because in their homes, there's all this authority and all this wrongness and all this judgment and all this control and stuff. And, you know, whenever Vietz would come home from school, my wife and I would, like, we would rush to the door. And we actually, whenever any of us came in, it wasn't just that. When any of us would come home, we would rush to the door and welcome them. And like all this joy in each other's spirit and beingness was the whole focus of it, you know, and how was your day and what's going on. And there's just this, I was just telling somebody, I can't remember who it was, but I was just telling somebody yesterday about how one of my greatest joys was I got to drive Vietz to school every day for like 9 years, 10 years, you know, like grade 12, right? So that's 13 years. And so like every day home, but there and back, we had like a half hour car ride. And, And just getting to spend that kind of time together is such a joy. And even now we text each other almost every day and send pictures of our food and send pictures of the sunset every day. And we just like are always in each other's lives. Vietz calls it separately together. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Is it painful not to live together, or
I don't find so. I still feel super close to them, and we're all still in Toronto super close anyway. So I feel like we can see each other whenever need be. We talk all the time as if we're together anyway, so it feels very connected still.
Mm. Beats, do you ever run into people who like tell you like, man, I wish I had that, like friend, like peers?
Yes. And yeah. I say, I'm sorry you didn't, but you could change that in the future if you have a child.
That's right. Yeah.
Is it weird or hard for you that your dad talks about raising you all the time?
Not anymore. I think it was a little weird, but that's just because I'm an introverted person. I don't want people to know my name, my face, or what I do. But also people need to hear all of that stuff as well to help them improve, grow through their mistakes and learnings and everything. So I think it's important to talk about essentially my life for everyone to hear.
Yeah, for sure. It's one thing to live it. It's another thing to spread the ripples out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And from the time that Vietz was very young, I was and I started to teach this stuff more publicly. I was always asking her if it was okay with her. I never published anything or talked about any event without having an agreement. And we would update it. I would ask for the consent, and then we would update it every 6 months or so. I'd say, are you still okay with it? And then even when I got the consent, and then I thought something was maybe, I thought maybe this one's too personal. Let me ask. Cause I would always say, hey, you already said yes, but this one felt like it might be personal. And some of the time she'd say, yeah, you know, this is great. Let's share that one. Sometimes she goes, you know, you're right. This one is more personal. Let's leave that one off. And, and so that's one thing. A lot of parents, you know, when they get a yes, they run with it. Right. And for me, I wanted the yes to be truly organic. I wanted it to be like, yeah, like a hell yes, like they say, you know? And if it was a medium yes or an unsure yes, I was like, okay, well, it doesn't seem like you're sure. And I want to make sure you're sure so that we all feel cared for and safe here. So I was never satisfied with a yes or a no, unless I felt like there was real genuine, like there was no pressure behind it, you know? That's why I call it the organic yes and the organic no.
Why do you think parents run with it?
Do you want to answer that, Vietz?
Sure. From what I've seen in life, it's like you want the person to give you that yes. And even if it's like, yeah, they're like, okay, that's a yes. Let's go to Connecticut, you know? But it's like, I don't really want to go to Connecticut. I just want to go down the street to the corner store. But then that sort of yes already came out, and they're not going to say anything else because it's like, hey, you already committed. Let's go to Connecticut. But sometimes it's, you're not looking at the, you know, it's a yes, but it's not really a yes. It's a forced yes or something.
Right. And that has to do with parents having an agenda. Like that's a big piece of this work, is asking parents to constantly look at their agenda.
Mm-hmm. If you have an agenda, you can still keep it, but also look how your team is feeling about that agenda, you know, because it's a team. It's even if it is tiny human and big human, it's still a team that has to work together through however many years of life.
Mm.
People really struggle with applying these principles to young children. Do you have any thoughts on that, Vietz? I have a kid. I have a young child, you know, a 2-year-old. People are always telling me that you can't do this with toddlers.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, all the time. I mean, that's all I hear. So again, like you, I don't actually get into it. And Rithi always says, and I'm sure Vivek, you've said this too, when it comes to like trying to convince people about it, like, you know, you're not trying to do that. Cause they need to be open in a way and curious. People will give their opinions kind of pretty quickly off the bat, especially if I'm like, oh, I have a podcast, and then they're like, what's it on? And then, you know, they're like, oh, but you only have a 2-year-old, you know, usually they're like, this is crazy. So I'm curious about that. Cause this must have, been how you like this happened. You were born into this.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. What are your thoughts on like the young children thing?
I personally haven't been around or worked with many young children, but the few times I have or have been with my dad when he's been vibing with a kid, it feels like if you're able to hear what they're saying, even if it's just like one out of every six words, they can feel that connection. They instantly open up and they're able to hear what you're really saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they ask you for an opinion on something, they can actually hear what you're saying to them, that opinion on whatever they asked for, if yeah. that makes sense.
1,000%. And I think too, what is the difference, a little bit of a difference with younger kids, like they're the way that it's palpable for them, like immediately, like that vibe of like, oh, this person is safe. I see that with younger kids, mm-hmm. like so clearly, like they're like little vibe checkers. Like they just mm-hmm. can feel that. I feel like it isn't about language. It's not about twisting your words, manipulating them, getting a yes from them or coercing them to like, you know, fit your agenda. It's truly about the equality and the willingness to collaborate and seeing them like an equal. And I struggle with helping parents understand that you have to bring that energy. You just have to really bring it, you know?
Yeah. Mm. You really have to let down your guard for a kid, because they, like you said, they know.
Yeah. They can read you so well.
So well.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I love the idea of the agenda. I really appreciate that. You know, like there was this time when I was at a youth conference. Vietz and I used to volunteer at the same youth conference every year for years and years. We went there every year. And I was at the youth conference and I was sitting at a table. We were having lunch and it was two parents and their 2-year-old. And the 2-year-old kept spilling water on the table and the parents kept trying to get them to clean it up and she wouldn't clean it up. And they were trying to be nice and they were trying to be forceful and they tried everything they could. The kid refused to take the napkin and clean it up. So at some point they got distracted and they turned away. And I said to the kid, hey, watch this. And I took some water and I spilled it on the table and I started flicking it around and making designs. And she was making designs and we were like having all this fun for like maybe 30, 40 seconds. It didn't go on and on. Maybe 30, 40 seconds. We were just playing with water and spilling it everywhere and kind of making fun. And it made a bit of a mess. And then without saying anything, I just took a napkin and I handed it to her and I took one and we cleaned it up together. Didn't have to say a word. Didn't say, oh, you should be cleaning up because you have to clean up your messes. You got to learn responsibility. Otherwise, when you go out to the world, you're going to end up in prison. That's what they always say. <You know, laughs> every single day, someone tells me that what I teach is going to end up with kids in prison. And so, but just like, and then the parents turned around and the two of us were cleaning. That's all they saw, right? The two of us were cleaning up the water and they're just like, how did you do that? Because they know what I do anyways, right? And so, and people always say, oh, Vivek, it's just your kid's special. And I'm like, yes, my kid is special. That's true. And also every human being is special. We all have the light of consciousness inside of us. We all come from the same infinite source. We all have something that's like there's in all the history of all the universes and all the dimensions, there will never be another Vietz exactly like this at this moment, because this moment is unique and this dimension is unique and this moment is unique. And that's precious and that's something powerful and beautiful. And if we can help our kids see that, that uniqueness that they have and the beauty that they have, and we have to see it in ourselves too that way, you know, like I was not brought up to see that about myself. And so when I ended up with Vietz in my arms all of a sudden, and this consciousness, and I saw her as a fully formed consciousness, not like you said, not an empty slate, but a fully formed consciousness with wisdom and depth. I wanted her to know herself, most importantly, you know, because I knew that if she knew herself and believed in herself, and that was the strongest foundation I could give her, not me imposing what I think she should be, but for her to be her truest self. And so I think that's a really powerful way to approach it. But we have to undo so much of our old programming in order to do that. And I think that's where a lot of this work is the undoing and rewriting.
I'm thinking about how parents that I talk to who really fight for their right to control their child, they truly don't understand. Like they don't have an understanding of what they're giving up. They don't get that. That's like the argue for your limitations thing. It's like, you know, they will argue with me all day long about why I should be controlling my child, but they don't want to open to letting go of control. It's so terrifying. And I feel like that's so much of what our work is to try to shed on light, a light on like why it's worth it. Like what you get, it's like, you only get one chance with that kid, you know? Mm-hmm. And Vitz, I'm just so curious, like how you connect your childhood to your life now, like what you know consciously about how it's affected your choices or your relationships. And I know that's a really big question. So whatever comes forward for you.
That is a very hard and good question. I'd say the main, honestly, the first thing that comes to mind, my favorite thing that my dad has ever taught me is play it cool. I say it to myself every day, no matter what situation you're in, if you can just like calm down, see what's happening, play it cool and deal with it, you're able to do it. No matter if it's happy, sad, scary, you just need it. Even if you're freaking out, just that millisecond of calm so you can see the three openings that you need to go through, then you're able to do it. And I think I just try to emulate that play it cool in everything I do. It's a very simple phrase, but you can make it work for anything, I find.
And another thing about if that's something that is almost like a philosophy or like something that guides you, the only way you can really use that is if you saw it modeled. And yeah, he would do it, right? So your dad being this like, hey, like play it cool, right? But it's like, he's got to do that. He's got to show you how to do that. He's got to show you what that looks like. He's got to do that when he's frustrated, upset, you know, in pain, in times of conflict with you. Like to actually be able to live by a philosophy, your parent has to show you how. And like, that's what makes that powerful. It's not like, oh, my dad like gave me this bit of advice, play it cool. It's like, okay, I can find that on Google or ChatGPT can tell me that. But you learned how to do that and you can implement that now in your own life. Like that's deeply touching to me.
Yeah, I definitely modeled some of my coolness, playing it cool, from my dad for sure.
Yeah.
And my mom as well. They have very different versions of playing it cool. And I've used both to help me through life for sure.
And Vivek, I wonder, like, that must be, that's your process. That's your, that's you dealing with your triggers. That's you navigating stressors. That's you looking internally to find a way to like navigate big feelings, right?
I wish I'd even heard of the word triggers when Vitz was born. Honestly, I didn't even know that was a thing. I used to say my ideology is clashing with my reality. Because I knew I wanted to be this cool young dad, you know, but then all this stuff from my past would come up and I would scream and I'd be like, who the hell is screaming just now? What the hell is happening? You know? And so like those first few years, I mean, I had the desire and I had the ideology and I had the, you know, the ideals I was striving towards, but the actual implementation of it was so challenging, so, so challenging. And so much stuff would come up, and then I was like, there was no even internet in 97, right? 97, 98, those early 2000s. I didn't have access to Google. Now you go through Instagram and every other parenting post is, oh, here's your triggers and your emotions and regulation and learn a thing and reparenting and repatterning, et cetera, et cetera. Thank goodness, you know, there's been a big shift in that, even though it's not as much of a shift as I would like. Mm-hmm. I want to go all the way. Though. Exactly. I want us to go all the way into the non-coercion.
So are we, I guess. So are we.
There you go. All four of
you
us.
You got to be extreme.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You got to be radical.
They're like, oh, it should be balanced, right? I'm thinking, you want to balance kindness and unkindness? I don't quite understand.
Right.
You have a balance between the two? It doesn't make quite sense.
Right.
Right. And so I actually had to notice about myself. I had to actually notice about myself that there were things that were coming up and there were patterns to it. Yeah. And when I would yell or when I would do something that was out of alignment, and I could feel the pain in my child's face and coming from her beingness. And I would let that go inside me and burn. I used to call it let it burn. And I would let it burn inside me, you know? And it's different than shame. I didn't shame myself. But there's a natural remorse, I think, that comes to us when we cause a negative or a undesirable impact on someone that we care about. And I think that's a beauty. That's part of our conscience, you know, and I think that's a beautiful thing. I let that feeling burn, and I would let that burning feeling, I would let that remorse lead me to what need to be healed. I would always think, this is where you need to love yourself more, Vivek. That was the conclusion I came to over and over again. This is where you need to put more love. This is where you need to put more love. This is where you need to put more love. And the more I did that to myself, the more I was able to let that come out and be the center of our relationship. It's an inside out. It's definitely an inside out journey.
Yeah, I have a lot of enthusiasm in my heart for what you're saying, because I'm right there doing that too. And it's like, you really can see such a shift if you apply that. You're going to mess it up, and you're going to shame yourself, and you're going to mess up, you know, you're going to rupture the relationship at times, especially in the young years where it's really hard. You're quite actually physically maxed out. And the self-love is so, so key. I'm just like nodding along passionately. I'm just like, yes.
Yeah. I guess my version of that is I wouldn't say I'm not mean, but every now and then I get really triggered and then I'm a little mean. And I've worked really hard on that, but times where I'm mean and I can't actually control myself, I feel out of control. My daughter, who's 12, she is very gracious with me. She'll go, Mom, what is going on with you? And I'll go, I can't stay up this late. I have 3 clients in the morning. Like, I cannot do this. And she's like, Mom, you're triggered. And I'll be like, yes, I am triggered. But like, can we just for one night, just not stay up till 1 in the morning? She'll be like, Mom, oh, gee, you're triggered. Like, she just knows it's me. I'm so happy she knows it's my problem. Mm-hmm. And she'll be very gracious with me. And then sometimes we have to brainstorm. Like, I'll be like, I can't stop being a jerk. You know, I'll be like, I know I'm being a jerk. I can't stop being a jerk. And we'll have to decide, are we going to wake up Will? Do I have to go downstairs for a while? Like, we have to brainstorm together because Mom can't stop being a jerk. I can't stop blaming her. I'll be in like a blaming mode. Like, why are you doing this to me? I'll be in victim mode. And so she doesn't shut down and blame herself. She'll be like, poor you. You're so fucked right now.
Do you remember that at all, Veets, when you were, you know, younger? And if do you remember that, him being, your parents being triggered and having to sort of like call them out or anything like that?
I do not.
No, hey. What were like times of, I don't know, conflict, or like, was it, it must have been conversation. It must have been just like everybody sharing what they felt.
I don't really remember. It's kind of just for right now. I have bits and pieces of random memories and then just a vibe from my childhood. It could be just my brain, but also this is just kind of how my brain is. So I just have a vibe from my childhood.
How would you describe that vibe?
Yeah,
I would say it's like a positive, neutral growth.
I wonder if, could you say any more about that? Like,
I'm trying to think. This is a question I haven't been asked. I remember the kind of whatever general history of my childhood as like a positive learning experience. There were definitely difficulties. I feel like a school probably overshadowed most of my parent issues. So then anything at home was just positive or my neutral space that I needed to get away from the outside world that was crushing me. And then I would be able to learn and feel and be positive or neutral, like I said, whatever I needed in that day at home and learning from them. And that went all the way till grade 12.
Wow.
And now, but differently now.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many questions.
Me too. Like, we're going to be here for 7 hours. I'm sorry.
Let's do it. It's a full Dungeons and Dragons game sleepover right now. You know?
Were your parents really different? Because they sound right now, it sounds like you were so on the same page. I don't know how you did that, Vivek. But yeah, we're like, what was the difference?
It was just personality. They did everything the same, though, from my memory. What I've been told, because I was too young to know, slash I was also in the womb, they said they came to a like an understanding. They both wanted to parent this different way and not bring back the past that they experienced and bring in a new future for people.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
My wife is from Trinidad, and my family's from India. So both very old school traditional traditions that we come from. And children are to be seen and not heard, and they're put in their place. And, in Trinidad, her this didn't happen to her because she managed to avoid it, but her brothers would have to go out and pick the branch off the tree that they were going to get smacked with, right? And so there was this kind of, we both had this kind of, and I was hit by my dad like all the time when I was a kid. And I can still remember the day that around I was 15 when I knew he couldn't hit me anymore. I remember how my whole life changed in that moment. I kind of went off the rails at that point and became really aggressive because all that repressed experience of being bullied at home, bullied at school. And then all of a sudden I had this like different sense of my personal power, but it wasn't a healthy personal power. It took years before that personal power became healthy. And so we both were like, we just can't. We can't. We could never live with ourselves, you know, if we repeated that cycle. And plus I felt the loss of relationship with my parents, you know, especially with my dad. I felt that. And I was like, more than anything, I don't want that, you know? And I always used to ask myself, if I do this thing, will she want to hang out with me when she's 18? That was one of my biggest questions, you know? Mm-hmm. If I take this cookie from her, why would you want to hang out with somebody who just took a cookie from you and said you couldn't have the cookie? I would want to hang out with somebody who did that. So people think, oh, yeah, it's so basic with me, but it's not. This whole philosophy has come from simple questions like that, seemingly simple questions like that, you know, but it's deeper than just, will you want to hang out with me at 18? It's like, how do we want to treat each other as human beings? Mm-hmm. What are my deep values? What kind of relationships do I, if I really think about what kind of deep relationships I want, what does that really mean? How are we going to engage with ourselves and with each other so that, because, you know, I figure like I want to change the world. I want to make the world a peaceful place. I want to bring peace and end the violence and the hatred and the prejudice and everything and the oppression. And if I'm not doing that work to dismantle those systems in my home, then the stuff I'm doing outside the home is, you know, it hasn't got a real foundation. It hasn't got a strong foundation to it. And then anything that we build that doesn't have a foundation, even if it looks beautiful, if you poke at it and there's no foundation, it's going to fall apart, you know? And so I wanted to make sure that we were dismantling all those oppressive systems in our homes right from the very beginning. And so my wife and I both had that same, we were just like brought together by the universe. We both had that same really strong desire. And we saw one or the other of us going out of alignment. And Ruthie, you've talked about this with your partner. We would poke the other and say, hey, this seems like maybe you're pushing too hard in this direction to get your agenda met. Oh, okay, thank you. I didn't realize. Thank you so much. I remember one time when Vitz was like two or something like that, and I lost my mind and I said, go to your room for something or the other. Sorry. And my wife just put her hand on my shoulder and she said, Vivek, we don't do that. And I was like, oh, you're right. You're right. Oh my God. And I ran after her and I picked her up and said, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And we hugged. Hugged out. But honestly, you know, when you asked about the...
She's shaking.
Well, I was just gonna say, you know, like those moments, honestly, after the first couple of years, those moments were few and far between,
right?
Because we put in so much work,
right?
One of my mom's sayings is there are no coffee breaks. Like we did not, there was no break. We just constantly working on it every single day, watching my mind, writing out what's going on, reflecting on it, thinking about my values. Wow. Loving the parts that were in pain and just over and over and over without relentless. Because I knew that if I let those patterns go on, they'd still be going on to this day. And I was like, fuck that. That's not what I want. You know, I want something different. So after the first couple of years, we started to really find a rhythm as a family, and it just kept growing and growing. And now when people spend time with us, they're like, they watch us interact, like it's hard for them to get. They're like, even her partner and her best friend have said, sounds like they're speaking a different language.
I was thinking about Vitz, I don't know what you know about me, but I had this very terrible childhood and I left home when I was 16 and I feel like, and I'm 54, 55, I'm 55. Right, Vivek, we're the same age, aren't we?
We are.
So I feel like I've spent my entire adult life trying to heal from what my parents did to me. That's what I spent almost all my time doing. I mean, you know, and not repeating the patterns takes a lot of work and it's very related to everything that was done to me and all the harm and all the pain in my body and my psyche and how I treat myself and my health and my, all the things I do to compensate from the things that happen. And it's so hard for me to imagine someone's life that's not about that because I'm also a therapist. So like all my clients are working on that. All my friends are trauma survivors and have had horrible childhoods because I like to be around people like that. It makes me feel seen. And just like what it could be like to not spend your adulthood on that. I just, I want to hear anything about your life, about what your life is like, what the focus of your life is. And even if you struggle, of course you struggle because you're human. Mm-hmm. Just anything about how you're doing.
For me, I'd say I don't have parental trauma to deal with, but I still have, 13 years of terrible school to deal with. By essentially from grade one, we'll say, all the way to grade 12, I had three nice teachers. Majority of them bullied their students, would like scream at them for nothing. They need to go to the washroom. In grade one, I still remember it. My friend needed to go to the washroom. The teacher said no. So she peed her pants. And this is me just having to remember all these little things from school, all the little nitpicky things that these teachers pushed us with and stabbed us with in our hearts and our brains. And then I'm at work, which was also terrible, a job after terrible job with terrible people and terrible systems. And I just have to deal with all of that. And I was just thankful I could come home to my parents, now also my partner, and just vent about these things, cry if I need to, punch things if I need to. Because it is so difficult to get past those little things. I try not to spread it out onto other people because that's what I was taught. Try to talk to the pillow or whatever if I need to, instead of yelling at my poor sales associate teammate who doesn't deserve me yelling at them because of 5 years ago when my ex-boss yelled at me for something, you know? Yeah.
Sometimes I hear the argument that, you know, you should absolutely use force, coercion, shame, and control in your parenting, because if not, they're not going to be used to it. But the argument that you're making is that, like, you don't bubble wrap your kids and keep them inside of your arms for their whole lives, but you create a container for the stuff that inevitably happens.
I would say a fortress, more so. Like, you can open that door, walk in, shut it, and you're safe from whatever's the catapults are throwing at you, you know? You got to stay in that, behind that positive wall in this case.
I totally dig the image of a fortress. I can totally see it at the big walls and the warriors on the top with the arrows, and the advancing army is coming in, trying to get in. And when we're in there battling the world together, I love it. It's such a great image. I'm totally
digging. Watching a lot of Star Wars and Dungeons and Dragons shows again. So that's the image that's in my mind right now.
I love it. I'm going to be seeing that for a while. That's great. I'm going to start using that, actually. I like it. Create a fortress. You know, your family is a fortress for your kids and for all of us, really, because we all mutually care for each other, right, and support each other. But as the parents, you start out creating that environment and the community structure, and to make it feel like a fortress of safety, a fortress of where you can be yourself, you know, and vent, like you said, vent about the world. And because the world is always going to be there's always going to be a hard things for us to deal with in the world, you know, and there's no escaping it. But a fortress gives us the safety and inside that fortress, we can do training and we can learn about the skills to deal with the pain outside of the fortress. But we don't have to have pain in the fortress in order to learn about it. Right, I love exactly. it. I totally love it.
Yeah.
Right. The idea is I need to hurt you to prepare you for being hurt, which does not make any sense. But that is the mainstream thinking.
Yeah. And people aren't really thinking when they say that, you know, they're not really thinking, Like I always say, people, okay, if you want to prepare your kids to experience pain and frustrations and obstacles and coercion and consequences in the real world, what are the actual skills that they need in order to do that? What are the mental skills, emotional skills, personal relationship skills, understanding of systems skills? What are all the skills? Did I say emotional relationship with self? What are all these skills? And then once you outline what all the skills are, and attitudes and knowledge, once you get all that, how do you pass that on? How do you teach it in an effective way so the kid ends up with those skills as their own, not just like on the surface where they're just repeating behavior, but they actually have integrated those skills in a way that actually makes sense and they can use it and it empowers them. And I mean, people who say, oh, you got to be tough on kids because it's a tough world, have never even thought about that kind of stuff, you know? Because as soon as you think about that stuff, you realize, okay, being tough, it's like I'm a martial arts teacher and I teach self-defense. And if someone said to me, Vivek, teach me how to not get punched, I wouldn't just punch them in the face hoping they figure it out. That's what giving consequences is, right? Give them consequences and they'll learn to deal with consequences. But no, I would actually teach them the skills, how to move their body, how to anticipate the punch, and how to, and then we would practice in a controlled, safe way in a situation where they trust so that they can build those skills. Mm-hmm. And then they go out, as how many of my students would tell me that the way that I taught it saved their life over and over and over again, or they were able to save someone else's life or protect someone else because the teaching happens in a gradual and safe container. Even if you're learning unsafe things or how to deal with unsafe things, it makes so much more sense to me.
I'm glad you said that, because if people haven't been listening to our podcast, but they somehow find themselves on this one, I think it'd be good to talk about what your household was like. Like, what does it even mean to be a non-coercive collaborative household on a daily basis? Just maybe just some examples or habits or patterns, or I don't know.
I don't really know. We just kind of lived. That's the best way to say it. We just went through life together. Death. Mm-hmm. you were a more fully formed mind back then.
differently formed. Differently. And well, I tell you, one example is the kitchen. I love our interactions in the kitchen. When we're in the kitchen, there's this whole dance that happens. You know, we're all making our own food. And the fridge and the stove and the toaster oven and the microwave. And one, like, anytime I open the fridge, somebody will hand me something to put in the fridge or ask me to take something out of the fridge. And we're always making sure that in the kitchen, when we're all in there, we're supporting each other. We're making sure that each person's experience is one of ease and that everybody knows that we can ask the other for help or offer it before they even ask, so that we're anticipating each other's needs and anticipating how we can help each other. You know, every time Vietz would go into her room, because she liked to spend a lot of time alone, she would always say, let me know if you need anything. I'm going into my room. I need some time alone, but let me know if you need anything. So there was always that sense that I'm taking care of my needs, but even in there, I'm still attending to caring about you and the other people in the community. And people have even commented watching us in the kitchen when they've come over to visit, watching the dynamic of how we work with each other in the kitchen. And sometimes there'd be like too much going on and we didn't have enough counter space and there wasn't enough room for one person. And that person would stand outside the kitchen, so they were in the way, but wouldn't go away. We would still be there together because we enjoyed being together so much. That we would still, like, I would sit on the chair. I called it the chair because, you know, if the chair is where we make the bad kids sit, right? And but for us, the chair was like, I would sit outside the kitchen or one of us would sit outside the kitchen and just hang out and talk, so that we were still connected and together, even if we had to make space. So like this focus on relationship and joy in each other's lives and supporting through the difficult times, those were always our focuses. And so when you make those things your focuses, it changes the whole dynamic. You know, homework was an example. Homework was never something that the adult insisted that the kid had to do. I couldn't bring myself to do that. Even now I say it and I'm like, you have to lose your mind in order to think that you should be forcing someone to do homework.
So what did you do instead? What'd you do instead?
Do you want to talk about that a little bit, Vince?
I don't remember. I blocked all of school out of my mind.
Oh, really?
I absolutely despise school, and I will put that on the record.
Yes.
I apologize to everyone that does love school. Learning is fun. There's difference between learning. I love to learn. Every day I learn something new, at least 5 things I try ish. I don't like school and how the dynamic was.
Yeah, you're talking about the system. Like, it must have been such a horrible, horrible place, considering, you know, this is one of my biggest fears. Like, my kid is likely going to go to the school down the road. I think your dad had mentioned once in a video or something, or when we were talking, that you had always been talking about other options. Like, you could try another school or like engage with learning in other ways, but you ended up staying at public school. And that obviously went terribly. And we know it's because of the system. But did you think about, you know, homeschooling or unschooling or, you know, trying other alternatives?
We kind of sprinkled them in when I needed to. There was a couple courses my dad took me out of, and then my mom or dad would teach me it at home or within the hour or something. And then I would still stay up with that. I tried other alternative learning schools, but it all comes down to the vibe. The vibe of public school, I liked it.
Yeah.
I didn't like the teachers and the system of it, but I liked the friends I made. I liked the vibe. I liked what I learned socially, as well as how to survive the systems that I was forced into and everything. But the vibe was just fun. It's weird to say. The vibe of public school was very fun for me. Yeah.
I so relate. That's you're describing my whole entire experience as well with public school. The vibe, yes. The stuff, no.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
I remember all the vibe stuff. I don't really remember the teacher stuff. I remember what I learned-ish, but I don't remember the teachers, really.
Man.
But what did you, if you didn't force homework, what happened instead, Vivek?
So there's a couple of different things. First of all, that any goals with homework were set by Vietz herself. And then as a family, we would work together to meet those goals. So if she's like, I didn't care about this assignment, none of us would care about the assignment. She said, I want to get a good mark on this test. We would all get together and work together and study. We would study all together. And we would make it fun and come up with acronyms, and we would do all the things, and we did homework together almost every single night. It was never go sit on your own and do homework unless she wanted to. I want to do this homework on my own, which doesn't happen often. I want to do this homework on my own. Fine, that's great. Otherwise, I often say I went through school a second time. even in high school, she would tell me what chapter they were doing in school, and I downloaded the textbooks and I would read it over while she was at school, and she would come home and I would already have an idea of what the subject was, and then we would do the work together. At times when she didn't want to do the work, I would just do the homework for her. She wanted to do half the questions and I would do the other half so she didn't get in trouble at school. And our handwritings were very similar. Sometimes I would actually write things out, you know. A lot of the times if she had to write an essay, she would give the ideas. I would type them in. Then we'd come up with a rough idea. Then we'd form them into like groups and organize it, and then make sentences and paragraphs out of it. And the whole thing was a collaborative affair. It was a family affair. It wasn't, this is your thing that you have to deal with. Because like Viet said, we are a team. Right. My wife works for an architect firm, and she's been working there for 15 years, and their team is really supportive of each other. And if one person on the team is struggling with something, they can reach out to other people on the team and they take up the slack and everybody works together. Nobody says, well, this is your job, you have to do it. That's not how they work. I think old school corporate systems probably did do that, but the new school corporate systems are working to be a much more human centered environment than they ever used to be. I mean, it was a few years ago that I was at the Starbucks, I remember. And I was eavesdropping on these two people next to me. And I thought, well, it sounded like a counselor or a therapist and their client. And I was like, this is a weird place to do therapy. My childhood this, and my thing that, and my relationships this and that. And the other person was like, yeah, I understand. That's really hard. Have you thought about this and this, this? So after the client in quotes left, I said, you know, I couldn't help it over here. I said, this is a really strange place to do counseling. Are you a therapist? She goes, no, we work in an office. I'm his manager, but this is what we do now. Once a month, we take every employee out at least once a month, and we talk about their lives, and we talk about their personal problems, and we give them guidance, because the more we do that, the more buy-in we get, the more retention we have, the more positive work environment it is, and the feedback that we've gotten, et cetera, et cetera. And it blew my mind. I was like, wow, I'm so glad to hear that corporations are taking a more holistic approach. And certainly homework was one of those things. It was a hard thing to do. It was challenging. There were good parts of it, but lots of bad parts and lots of busy work and unnecessary and lots of stress around it. And there can be lots of judgment around it. And I was like, let's make it something that brings us all together. Let's make it something that focuses on our relationship and focuses on a feeling of support. And so there were never any rules around it. It was always about, it was always about freedom and helping Veets attain her own goals for it, whatever they would be. And sometimes she didn't know. And we would, even that we would discuss together. What are your goals? What different kinds of goals could there be? And what would be the, it's like you talked about the consequences of hitting the brick wall, right? We talk about what the different consequences are but not consequences like we would ever impose consequences, but right. Consequences as in results, mm-hmm. what the potential results of something would be. Yeah. And then it was up to her to tune into her own wisdom and her own sense of herself, what made sense. And then as a team, we would all get on board with that.
Well, okay, I'm bringing up a really touchy topic and we don't have to go here. This is just if you feel like it. But like, Veets, I'm sure you know, like the big thing right now is screen time. Like everybody's completely triggered out of their minds about children and screen time. And I get the feeling that you didn't have screen time limits and that you were, I remember seeing something where you said, I can't remember if you two were talking on a video. I can't remember how I heard you say, oh, the internet is the best. That's what you said. You said, oh, I love the internet. It's the best. And so hasn't it destroyed your self-esteem? Aren't you a major internet addict? Don't you never go outside? You don't know how to be in nature. Don't you hate your body? Aren't you ruined from this modern day thing?
Completely. No, I'm kidding. I so absolutely adore the internet. I think it's the best library without going to the library. My favorite thing is to read, but books are so expensive now. So I just get all my books online. The library app is wonderful. I go to nature, but with my phone and stare at it for 3 hours and read my book. So it's the same thing.
Uh-huh. So you don't feel like it's corrupted you somehow?
For sure. No doubt it's the internet's corrupted me, but it's hard to avoid that. Everything is going to corrupt you in some way. You just have to figure out how to let that corruption sit in you.
Yeah.
For me, I guided the internet screen time corruption into learning about new hobbies, reading more, finding new art things to do. I love movies, TV and stuff, so I watch it not just for watching it, but for the animation styles, for the voice acting, for the acting and directing. I try to watch as many movies as possible, as many TV shows as possible, because then you can see the directing style between A24 and like Blumhouse, and then like the kids shows or the adult cartoon shows like Bob's Burgers and stuff like that, The Boys. It's so drastically different. But you could see the directing is similar sometimes, or they might have crossover some ways. Mm-hmm. And you can use those things that you learn in the TV shows in real life. The Star Wars cartoon that I'm watching right now is Clone Wars. And at the beginning of every single episode, they put a really deep quote that signifies what the episode is going to be about. Mm-hmm. And I find those sayings right now have been really helpful in life. And I don't really remember them because I've been watching it really fast, but they're like, remember to see the light when you're in the darkest spot.
Mm.
Stuff like that at the beginning of the episode. But if you're not watching TV, you'll never see stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, people have a strong judgment that, you know, that's not learning for some reason. Like, I don't know why people have decided that. Yeah. Learning in our society is sitting at a desk and people shoving information orally or through sheets and books and like down your throat. It's not like self-directed. So it's so wonderful to hear what you're saying, because it is such a vast place to learn. It's endless.
Yeah.
But imagine had you had like limits and restrictions and this shame around your use. Mm-hmm. It cuts off the ability to like freely explore and find what speaks to you, you know? I have a lot of students in the past. I used to work with the kids who were diagnosed with like things like ADHD, autism. And the parents had a lot of conversations about screens because they would think that they would be impacting their kids' learning issues and challenges. And what they were totally missing in that conversation was the amazing things their kids were doing with the screens. And it was really sad to see this emphasis on limits and restrictions and boundaries when it comes to screen time, when these kids were absolutely thriving online, like in their learning and their ability to express themselves because of their own self-directed journey.
That was very good. I want to add something about this whole thing about limits, because it's like limits are, and boundaries are the buzzwords of parenting and even gentle parenting, right? And for me, one of the core elements of that is I never felt that in my relationship with my kid that it made sense for me to have the power and authority to impose a limit on her. Not only because I didn't think it was effective, that also because of that, but just purely in the relationship that we had, that for me to use my power to enforce a limit or enforce a boundary on this other human being meant I was using violence and power to control them. And I could never allow myself to do that. That was more important to me than even if everything got worse because I didn't set a limit, even if it damaged her, which it didn't, maybe a little bit, but even if it damaged her and it was worse and it was less effective, I still wouldn't do it because it wasn't in alignment with treating her like a human being. And using my power to control someone, I couldn't do it. I couldn't let myself bring myself to treat her that way, because the damage to the relationship, both her relationship with herself and my relationship with myself and our relationship with each other. I always talk about there's the four relationships: the relationship with the kid with themselves, the relationship with the parent with themselves, and the relationship we have with each other. And the fourth relationship is relationship with other people and other systems that they end up learning and through what they learn at home. So all those relationships are damaged when we exert power and authority over our kids, you know? And instead, I just wrote this recently, and I'm going to make an article about it, that I really believe that as human beings, we have incredible amount of creativity and problem-solving capacity and the ability to imagine things that never were. And that we can learn and we can discover ways to guide our kids in positive ways without having to use that control and authority, so that we maintain the relationship and we still are effective guides to them all throughout their lives. And I think that is one of the most important things of this whole path, is that effective or not, I refuse to use violence with my kid. And yes, and a limit is violence, because if they just say no and go to reach the cookie, what are you going to do? How are you going to stop them? The only way is using your power and get in the way, right? And I refuse to do that. I just refuse. Even now, like, I want to fight someone. I'm just like, I refuse, you know? So.
Well, you really have to get that you're hurting yourself. Like people, that parents, you know, when you do it, when you force your child, you're hurting yourself. I mean, when you really start to break it down, when you hurt your kid, you're hurting yourself. But we're so numb to it. We're just so in our heads about it.
Yeah.
You know, that people aren't, you know, my friend Naomi brought up her daughter non-coercively, but she didn't call it that. What she called it was, I would do things and it would hurt my child that I couldn't do it anymore. That was it. That's her whole, she doesn't even have more words for it. She's just like,
right.
I couldn't hurt my kid anymore. Her right. face would change and I would go, ooh, ow, I don't want to do that. And that was what guided her parenting. She didn't have all this stuff we have right now, the way we've broken it down. And they're really close, like you guys are close.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, the willingness to take their feedback too, because you know that will guide you forward. Most people are shut off to that. They don't actually believe that. They don't agree with that. They don't want that advice because, no, you have to set limits and boundaries. So
I wanted to tell you all that I make videos about parenting all the time. And I have to say, it's getting harder and harder for me to talk about my kid, because I don't have that much to say. Kind of like you saying, I don't really remember my childhood. It's just the vibe. Like, we have so little conflict at this point. I've now finally, we're kind of peace about bedtime finally. I don't have that much to say. We're just friends. Like, we just hang out. We have fun. We don't know. We talk about it. It's not even hard to talk through. I mean, it's just becoming so flowing. I don't even have many stories to tell, except that she's funny. She's very funny, and she says funny things. She's super hilarious. So I have stories about that. But, like, now my video making is getting more difficult. I think that's kind of interesting.
Mm.
I'm just like, I don't know. Things are cool. We're psyched. We love each other. You know, it's harder to say, you know, she wouldn't do this. And then I had to do that. The thing is, she is starting school. I mean, the plan is that she's starting school for the very first time this fall. Mm-hmm. And I've been working on my non-attachment to the outcome. I'm like, if she goes and she lasts 3 days, that's cool. You know, I'm working on letting go of the outcome. If she, you know, I think it'd be good for her to do a year, but she knows better. She really knows better. And I'll be there to support and help her figure out what the next move is. That's going to be big. That's going to be really big.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also important to talk about the friendship side of parents and children, because people hear about it, but they don't see it as often.
This is a perfect segue into what I was going to ask you, Vietz, which is, like, what is it like for you to see other parents parent the traditional way? With authority and control, especially now that you're, you know, you're in your late 20s. So it's like, I mean, I don't know if you think about having your own kids ever in the future, but there's just something about becoming, you know, older and older and watching people parent, especially growing up with this. What's that like?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it kind of hurts to watch because, like y'all were saying, you can see the break in the child's eyes.
Yeah.
And it's just terrible to see a kid be sad or in pain in some way, even if it's not physical.
Hmm.
And me and my partner always discuss how to not do that in the future, what we're going to do, how we're going to not be like our parents, and how we are going to be like our parents, and how to change certain things or continue what they were doing for when we bring in our next, the spawn of us in the future.
So a spawn is maybe in the future?
Definitely. I want one or two, and my partner wants like eight. So we've settled on two or three. Yeah.
Cool to imagine like a generation, like a couple generations down, right, Vivek?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Even when we were in the early days, I always knew that this was like partially us, but partially generational shifts were happening, and global too. Like, I really felt like we were making decisions that were going to affect the whole world at some point, you know, because people just don't treat each other this way very often. I mean, I think the internet has helped spread the word a lot more, which I think is a wonderful thing. Another wonderful thing about the internet, it spread the word a lot more about. Yes, exactly.
You got to be on the screen to get this new knowledge.
How else would you get it? That's it.
Yeah, you got to get like on the screen. You two are like my best buddies, and I met you through
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, like, you can have all these ideas, but if you can't connect to other people and cultivate community, I mean, you're not going to do it when the world is 99% authoritarian. So you have to go to the internet to find Vivek's blog from 2004 and be like, what is this guy talking about? I like to see it. Because that is like how you can cultivate connection. And the internet has such an influence, you know?
Vietz, I appreciated what you started saying when you said it's important to talk about the friendship part of the parenting too, you know, because it's what I always say, the don't do and the do, right? The don't do, I think, is really important. We don't want to punish, and we don't want to criticize and condemn. And I mean, we never even said no. It always makes people's eyes go wide when I say that, but we never even said no, unless we really had to. Like, like when my back was hurt, I couldn't have her climbing on me. I would scream in pain. So there was this kind of a no, but it was like not me saying no to her. It was the backache saying no to both of us, right? And that's a very different thing. But again, in order to say no to someone else, you have to have the authority to do that. But the other side of it is the do-do, is creating that relationship of connection and joy and celebration in each other's lives and mutual respect and support. And that is a very active process. It's something that requires attention, and it's something that requires, nurturing. And it's something that requires constant evaluation, self-evaluation, but also evaluation of the systems that you have in your home, evaluation of the way you communicate, the way you speak in your own mind, and then the reflection of that as it comes out, and then how the other person is receiving you. And like, it's not something to take lightly. It's something that we put a lot of work in, all of us do. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons that we have such a beautiful flow in our relationship. And, because when there is a bump, we take it very seriously. Not shame and not blame, but we take it seriously. It's like, okay, well, there's a bump. Like there's one time when Vitz was like putting sparkly things on her shoes or something. And we went to the craft store, and she wanted to buy this one particular kind of gems. And my wife and I were like, oh, you got to get these ones. These ones are better. You got to get these ones. And then when she got home, she got upset. And when she got home, she said, it really makes me upset, but you're telling me what to do. I knew what I wanted, and you told me what to do. And I was like, thank you for telling me. You're totally right. We totally were doing that. And of course it would be upsetting to experience that. I certainly get upset too when someone treats me that way. And I'm really glad to know it. Now we can like really make sure we don't do that anymore. And I took it seriously. I was like so grateful for that feedback, you know? And so like relationships, like conscious relationships are about the constant evolution with each other and learning to treat each other more and more and more in ways that make the other person feel affirmed and supported and worthy and dismantling the parts that create the opposite. And I think it's a beautiful process, and it's ongoing 27 years in, and our relationship is still very conscious, and we're still very aware of nurturing each other. It's a beautiful thing.
There are several podcasts on this podcast series where Kara and I model what it looks like to track our triggers as parents, because it is so darn triggering. And for me, with heavy, heavy trauma, it was very triggering, and it has been for a long time. It's better now. The triggers are a lot better now that she's 12. Although I don't know, she's going to be a teenager. Maybe that's going to hit a whole other level of stuff for me. I have no idea. But we're talking about choosing this lifestyle and choosing not to punish, but a lot of times parents are triggered out of their absolute minds, and they take everything personally. That's what I see so much. Sometimes my kid says things to me that are really about her, and I know that. And so I just like stay really open to it and get really curious. Sometimes I make jokes. Sometimes I ask her about it. Like, I've really trained myself to not take her lashing out even as lashing out. I just see it as her, like you call it, reaching out. I take it as her showing me where she's in pain. That is years and years of therapy and skill and self-analysis and self-inquiry to not take her stuff personally. So it's a very, very difficult thing, what we're talking about. It's very hard for people. Yeah. Intellectually, like just to get that it's possible, and then emotionally, and then spiritually, and then psychically, it's a journey. It's a really, really hard journey. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to help people see there is a path. There is actually a path.
Mm-hmm. Beats, I wondered if there was anything else you wanted to share before we close.
I don't think so. I feel like just saying it's going to be a bumpy road, but it'll get less bumpy as you keep going. And y'all will go through that journey together, and it'll just, hopefully you can stick it out together, you know?
I don't know why, like, that's exactly what I needed to hear you say, and you said it, but that really does. I think especially something that stuck with me was your emphasis on the vibe, and that's the memory you have, the imprint of your collective family system, how it's been wired, and how it's left you with memories and the impression that you have. Like, that gives me so much hope, because even amongst the conflict, like, all you can really recall is how you moved through that with mutuality and respect. Like, it's amazing to hear.
Mm-hmm. For me, I'm just a girl trying to get through this chaotic life, and I'm happy to have my parents along for the ride with it, so I can get, like I said, into that fortress if I need to.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Like, I want to hug everybody. I always say that. I really do, though. That was amazing. That was really touching.
I loved going back and forth with you, Veets. It was so fun to share our ideas back and forth with each other. And I love every time that we explore things together. And you know, I've written so many articles and I've made so many videos about this process because it's beautiful and there's parts of it that are simple, but it's also extremely complex. And I have over 200 videos on my YouTube channel and hundreds of articles on my Facebook page. And I'd love everybody to follow me at Meaningful Ideas is my social media handle. Meaningful Ideas on Facebook and Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Threads too, even though I don't post on Threads very often, and YouTube, where I have over 200 videos and it's getting more all the time. And you know, going through the YouTube channel, if you watch all 200 of those videos, I really believe it'll just transform your entire life and your mindset. So it's really, if I do say so myself, it's really worthwhile experience. And I am going to be having some workshops coming up. So I'm going to be doing workshops on staying connected with your kids in the age of digitization. And a few other ones, and it's really worthwhile. So keep an eye on my social media for announcements about that.
And some of these links will be on our notes for this podcast.
Show notes. Yeah.
Fantastic.
This has been Your Kids Don't Suck. You can find me, Kara Tedstone, at www.karatedstonetherapy.com and on Instagram at Kara Tedstone Therapy. On my website, you'll find links to recommended readings, and a link to my Reparenting with Mindfulness workbook, available now on Amazon.
You can find me, Rathia Lee, at www.rathia.com. That's RYTHEA.com. There you'll find published books, articles, and music, and parenting videos. Also, I'm on TikTok at Rathia Lee, on Instagram at Rathia Lee. You can book parent mentoring sessions with me through my website. And also I have an Advice from a Loving Bitch YouTube show that helps people heal self-hatred, and that's rathia.com/advice. It is important and essential to put our voices, Rathia and Kara, in a context. We are two white, cisgendered, straight, middle-class women living with financial and societal privilege. Because of this, our perspectives are limited and do not reflect the realities of all of our listeners. This podcast will feature guests with expertise around conscious parenting who differ in race, class, abilities, sexual orientation, and histories from us, to broaden the conversation and reflect the lives of as many people as possible. 25% of the proceeds of this podcast will go to creators of color who have been mentors and influences on our work and in our growth as parents.
If you like our show, please subscribe and stay tuned for more conscious parenting advice and insights. And check out our link tree at linktr.ee/yourkidsdontsuck to donate and connect with us.